tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
So I have always tried to live a very exclusive lifestyle. I never just wanted to be like a face in the crowd. I always wanted to do things that were different. And that led me to do a lot of cool things in my life, but it also proposed a big challenge in my life for from one of my best relationships and my cousin, Michael. My family, I have a weird family. So my dad and his older brother married two sisters. So I have a really close family, and they both had three children, a girl, a boy, and a girl. And we're all the same age. So we're all like, our sisters were born one day apart, me and my cousin were born a month apart, and then our younger sisters were born 6 months apart. So very, very, very close family, kind of weird. We live in the South, it's not incest, I promise. So me and my cousin Michael, when it comes to our dad's side of the family, are two of only three boys. Out of the 15 cousins, there's only three boys. So and the other boy was the oldest. So when we got together for family events, she typically wasn't around much because he was off at college. He had other things he was doing. So we had these family events. It was me and my cousin Michael and 12 girls. And when you're a little kid, that's not the most fun when you're hanging out with all these girls, all these teenage girls. So me and Michael just always kind of got lumped together as Michael and Chris. And while we love each other, we have a great relationship. It was always just Michael and Chris this and Michael and Chris that. And we both have this idea that we want to have an exclusive life. We don't want to just live the same life as the other person. So it made us kind of challenge each other. And so when Michael and I started playing sports, like he would play soccer and I would play basketball and soccer. So I was like, so see, we're still the same, but I'm also a little better. And then when we were in school and like studying and getting grades, like I would get a 99, he would get a 100. And so we would always just constantly say, like, we're doing the same thing, but one of us is a little better. And we fought like this, and we've been fighting like this for our entire lives. I'll tell you a quick story. When we were both dating and about to get married, my cousin Michael got engaged first because he wanted to beat me. So he's getting engaged, and I'm there to take pictures of the event for him and his fiance to enjoy later. And we went up to Washington, D.C., and the entire ride up, she doesn't know she's getting proposed to. Me and my girlfriend are following in a car, my wife now, and we go there and take pictures. And as we're looking back through the pictures of the day, we notice that my cousin Michael's zipper wasn't zipped up on his pants. And everyone thinks that's a hilarious story. Ha ha ha. He was so nervous, he forgot to zip his pants up. And in the moment, I am furious because Michael now has this exclusive story that I no longer have. So then a few months later, I decide to get engaged, and I purposely unzip my pants and propose to my wife so I wouldn't be left out of the story. I wanted to have this exclusive story, and I wasn't going to let him take it from me. So me and my cousin have been fighting like this forever, and I kind of think that the reason we're in the professions we are now is because we're in the same argument. I'm a pastor, he's a police officer, my dad is the chief of police of Bucosin, his dad is the pastor of a local church in Hampton. We didn't want the other one holding stories over me, so we constantly fought trying to be better than the other person, to be more exclusive than the other person. And for the longest time, I just thought it was me and him. I thought we fought about this stuff all the time, and it was just me and him trying to fight each other for being better. And then I realized that this actually happens all the time in our lives. And I started meeting a lot of other people, and I started becoming friends with other people, and realizing everyone wants to be like the top dog, wants to be more set apart than everyone else. I'm one of our pastors on staff. His name is Scott. He is a diehard Eagles fan. If you ever see him walking around, he probably has an Eagles hat on. And this entire year, the Eagles have been dominating in football, and they ended up winning the Super Bowl, if in case you haven't noticed or watched football at all. And I am a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan. So every Sunday or every Monday after the games, I would be in the office, and to walk through the office, you have to go by my office to get to Scott. So Scott would just walk in, turn his head, point to his hat, and just keep walking. And it was the most infuriating thing. So then I have to start coming back at him with all these other stats, like, no, but the Cowboys have 5 Super Bowls, you only have 1. And no matter what he said, no matter how dominant the Eagles were, we kept fighting about being exclusive and being the best. And it didn't matter who was winning at the time. It didn't matter when the Eagles beat the Cowboys 1 week. I was like, nope, we're still better. And I just held it. I was like, nope, Cowboys are better. They have a longer-lasting tradition. We have 5 Super Bowls. You're dumb. And I just pushed him away. Because I want to be the most exclusive person. I want the things I do and the things I like to be the best. And that's a great thing, and I think that's a great thing for our society, and it's a great thing to have competition, and it actually helps us, and it pushes us to do better in what we do in our lives. But then there's a problem. This idea of being exclusive, of setting ourselves apart, creeped into the church. And instead of being inclusive as a church and accepting people, we started to push people away, and we started to be exclusive. And how many people here have been in situations where they felt excluded from the church? How many times have you walked into a church and been like, man, this just isn't for me. No one wants to talk to me. Everyone's just in their own little groups. And how many times in life have we had to console children because of this idea of being of an exclusive group hanging out, and they say, they just don't want to play with me. I can't tell you the amount of times I hear from people who don't go to church that are my friends that say, I don't want to go to church because they think that they're better than everyone else. And we built this idea of being exclusive and being better than and being set apart, and we've taken it and we've twisted it. And we've made up all these walls and pushed ourselves farther away from each other. And instead of being inclusive, we've become exclusive groups. And I want to talk about that feeling that we have. Sometimes when we feel excluded, sometimes when we exclude others, I want to talk about that idea of excluding and being exclusive, because God is not exclusive. And our big idea for the day is that God is inclusive. God doesn't want to push people away. He doesn't want to make a big difference between us. He doesn't want to make us better than everyone else. He wants us to include people. He doesn't want us to walk into a church and the first thing we notice is how tight-knit the group, the pastor is with his close friends and how we can't get access to him. Or he doesn't want us to walk in and no one say hi or welcome a new person. He wants us to be inclusive. He wants to welcome everyone. He wants there to be a seat for everyone at the table. And so I want to talk about this idea of being inclusive with God. And I think it goes great with the series we're starting with the road to Easter. So I've chosen a verse. I'd like us all to stand up and read it together to honor this text, honor the words of Jesus, because if we honor it, we're going to get more out of it. So let's read this verse together. It comes from Luke chapter 22. It goes, and he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave it to them, saying, this is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, after the supper, he took the cup, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. Excellent. You guys can be seated. So we need to know some context here, because if you kind of just drop into these words right now, I notice, like, you guys aren't, like, gasping at these words. There's no old Southern women, like, clutching their pearls and waving fans over themselves and fainting because these words are being said. This doesn't seem very very radical to you when you read these words, but this statement that Jesus just made is incredibly radical for what he's doing in his ministry. And so we need to have some context as to why these verses are so radical and how they really talk about being inclusive in the body of Christ. So to give some context to these verses, if you look back a little bit in Luke 22, we come across this verse that says, then came the day of unleavened bread, to which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. So this gives us some context for what's going on here. This meal that Jesus is eating with these other people, this bread he's breaking, this wine he's having, it's during a time of the year called Passover. This is the most important holiday for the Jewish faith. The Jewish people have about three major holidays, and this is one of them. And this is one of their oldest ones. It goes all the way back to when they were in captivity in Egypt. And in order to understand what Jesus is saying at the table with the bread and the wine, we have to go all the way back thousands of years to what happened in Egypt. So we're going to look back at Exodus 12 and talk about some of the things that we showed in the book there. Now, this is a lot to run over. I didn't want to put all the verses on the screen because it was so much to read. So if you want to follow along in YouVersion, all the verses are there. But I'm just going to break down what's happening. But what happened in this story is, if you don't know, there's a people that Jesus had, that God had called his people, is this Jewish people, and they were in slavery in Egypt. While they're in slavery, they were crying to God to free them, and he kept asking God, please get us out of the slavery, we want to be free, and finally he answered their prayers. He came to this man called Moses, and he says, Moses, I'm going to free my people, and you're going to do it. So Moses reluctantly goes to the Pharaoh, the king, and he says to him, he's like, you need to let these people go, you need to stop holding them as slaves, and let us leave. And the Pharaoh kept saying no. And so God kept put plagues on Egypt to keep telling them to put pressure on the Pharaoh, like, let these people go and these plagues will stop. You need to let them go. And Pharaoh every time said, no, no, no. And finally, Moses came to the king and said, listen, he's like, there's one more plague coming. He's like, you need to let them go before this happens. This one's going to be way worse than all the others. You need to let the people go. And Pharaoh again said, no. So then God sits down with Moses and he starts telling them, okay, this is what's going to happen, and this is what I need your people to do in order to show honor to me so they know that this all this is coming from me. It's all about me here. It's all about what I'm going to do for you. I want you guys to honor that, so I'm going to show you. So he creates a festival for them. He says, this is going to be the first month of your year, and we're going to start with this huge festival. So from now on, start the calendar right now. Right now is one. And in this first month, this is what I want you to do. The first month of every year, but we're going to start it for the first time right now. He's like, I need you guys to take a lamb and keep it for 14 days. Make sure this lamb is perfect. I don't want any flaws in the lamb. I don't want it to be sick. I don't want it to be hurt. And you're going to take that lamb, and then you're going to slaughter it. And you're going to take the blood and put it on your doorways. And that way, it's going to mark you separate from the Egyptian people. So when you're marked separately, the punishment is going to be, this plague is going to be, the firstborn child, the firstborn male of every family is going to die. But if you follow these traditions, if you do what I want you to do right here, you won't receive that punishment. So take the blood and put it on the door frame. Then take the animal and you need to cook it in a specific way with these specific herbs and spices. 17, I believe. And then you're going to have to eat the food in a specific way. I want you to dress a certain way. I want your shirts tucked in. I want you all to stand around the fire in a certain way and eat in a specific way in order to honor me. And all of these things were done. All these rules were set into place, culminating in this one verse. In Exodus 12:14, it says this. This is a day you are to commemorate. For the generations to come, you shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord, a lasting ordinance. So we have a lot of rules we just went over, a lot of things that had to happen specifically. And what Jesus wanted, and what God wanted these rules to happen, the most important thing was that this was to honor the Lord. This was to show God that they trusted him, they loved him, and they were going to believe what he had said to his people. So a lot of rules, but it came down to we need to honor God. Now let's flash back to where Jesus is. To this meal he's having with his people. It's happening during this time. This is supposed to be a time where the people are honoring God. They're supposed to honor God, remember what he did for his people, and remember that he always provides for his people and that he loves his people. It's all about who the God is. However, the Jewish people got exclusive, and they caused a problem. And they switched God's message to them. And instead of focusing on God the entire time, they came up and they said, you know what? This festival's really about us. It's really about being God's chosen people. It's really about the fact that God chose us over these rulers. And even though we are in captivity then, he loved us more and he destroyed them. During this time that Jesus was alive, the Jewish people were once again being ruled over by the Roman government. And instead of making this about Jesus and how he was faithful before and how he will be faithful again, they said, this is about us. We know we're God's chosen people. We know the Romans are all evil and that God's going to kill them all. It's all about us. And during this time leading up to when Jesus was alive, instead of following the rules that God had for them for Passover, the Jewish people started adding some rules. They said, you know, in order to really get the full effect of the Passover, we should really do these meals in the temples. At the big cities, if you come to the temple, you'll get way more blessing. It's so much better. And you should really buy our animals that we're going to raise, because we know we'll raise them right. We'll make sure they're healthy. We'll make sure they're perfect. And even though if you bring your animals, you still get the Passover, but you're better if you do it this way. And you're even better off if you follow these rules we're making for the meal. We have to eat this meal, and we're going to do certain things at certain times. We're going to drink these cups at certain moments to show God's blessing. And we're going to eat the food at certain times to show the blessing. And the Jewish people kept adding rules and adding rules and adding rules. And by the time Jesus showed up, it was impossible to be a part of the Passover festival if you weren't a higher up, if you weren't an elite, if you weren't one of the leaders. So all these poor Jewish people are like, we can't travel to the big cities. We can't afford these animals that they want to sell us. We can't afford buying all this wine and all this food for all these different people, and they couldn't take part in the Passover the way that the Jewish leaders were telling them they needed to do. So it started excluding them. And they started pushing the people away and pushing the people away. And that's happened so much that the Jewish people, even to this day, have kept on adding rules and adding rules to their meals and to the Passover festival to keep representing new things that they think God wants them to be doing. And it keeps excluding more and more and more people until there's only just a tiny, tiny group. So Jesus walks into this scenario, and that's what he's dealing with. He walks into a scenario where people are getting excluded. They're getting pushed away from this really important religious festival, one of the most important ones that has ever existed for their people, and people are getting excluded and pushed away. And so Jesus walks into this festival, and he walks into this ceremony, and he flips it back. And in a time when the Jewish leaders are saying you have to do all these different things, Jesus takes some bread and breaks it and says, "This is my body broken for you." He takes one cup and he says, "This is my blood. Do it in remembrance of me." And he flips the entire thing around. And instead of making it about the people, he turns it back and makes it about him. He makes it about God again. This is like taking Easter and me standing up here and saying, "Hey, we're no longer doing Easter, we're doing Chris Day. Every year we're going to do a Chris Day. You guys need to put a big picture of me on the wall. I'm going to come up here and speak. I want everyone to come and kiss my feet. Chris Day." That would be... You would mob the stage and kill me right now if I said we're going to have a Chris Day instead of Easter. But that's what Jesus was doing. It was the same idea, that he's making everything about him, making everything about God, and taking it away from the people. That's how controversial these words were to him, that these words were to the people. So when he's sitting there saying, "This is my body broken for you, this is the cup of my blood, do it in remembrance of me," these are the most controversial words he's ever said, because he doesn't care about all the rules. He doesn't care about your money. He doesn't care about where you came from. He cares about bringing you together. I need two volunteers. Two people, raise your hand. Extroverts, where you at? Yep, one right there. Hands up. Go ahead. I need you up on stage, bud. I need one more. Be bold. Someone. Yes, right there. I love it. Okay. Woo, let's give them a hand. Yeah. Hello. Could you tell your name to everyone, please?
I'm Jan.
Jan. Hi, Jan. Say your name for everyone.
Kendall.
Kendall. Hi, Kendall. All right. So, Kendall, I need you to stand right here. Yeah, you guys can stand right there. So, this is basically what's happening right now in where Jesus is. We have the ceremony that God set up in Passover, which is really simple. You follow the simple rules, and you get a blessing. But then, we started changing things. And we started adding rules. So, Kendall, come take a step this way. And we started adding rules. And you're like, to really get the best thing, you got to be a man. You got to be a man, and then you get more blessing. And then they added another rule. Like, to really get a blessing, you had to come to these big cities. And you had to get, and to really get the blessing, you take another step this way. We're just excluding Jan further. We really have to wear white shirts. And to really get a blessing, just come over here. And to get a blessing, you just have to, just have a short haircut that's slicked back. And then we kept on adding rules and adding rules and adding rules and giving blessings to these people. And so look, if you look right now, Kendall has all the blessings in the world, and here poor Jan is with her poor pack of Skittles. And even though she's doing exactly what God wants her to do, even though she's following the rules of the Old Testament, following exactly what God says, the Jewish people are just praising Kendall up and down for being Kendall and giving him all the candy in the world. And saying, these are all the blessings, he's doing everything right, and now there's this huge gap between them. And there's no way that we can fix the gap. How do we bring Jan along if she can't follow these rules? How do we make people come into the faith if we have to follow all these rules that they can't follow? So Jesus comes and he flips the script. And Jesus steps up, and he gets on a cross. And then he fills the gap. And instead of making it about all the rules and all the things you had to follow, and to get a blessing you had to do this, 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 and this, he says, come to the cross. He says, bring everyone. He says, I don't care about the rules. I don't care about what you said. I don't care about what you heard. It's about me. It's about my Father. Come together. It's about being together. Thank you guys so much. Give our helpers a round of applause. You can keep your candy. Go ahead, bud. Thanks. What? Yeah, you can keep it. That's all for you. Yeah. Blessings just falling everywhere. Excellent. Well, so Jesus did something radical here. He flipped it. Instead of making it about a group that God loved, he made it about himself. He made it about the only thing that we should care about. He made it about what he was about to do. Jesus had a meal together with his closest followers and said, "This festival is not about you. It's not about the past. It's not about what's happened. It's about me. It's about God. It's about bringing people together so they can feel love and feel grace, because without me, none of this matters." And so Jesus got his closest followers together and said, "See this? This is my body. You see this? This is my blood. And instead of Passover, we're going to do something new. We're going to do communion. So we don't care about Passover anymore. We care about this. We care about remembering who I am. Because in one day, I'm going to be up on a cross dying. And you need to remember that more than anything else. It doesn't matter about your history. It doesn't matter about your kings. It doesn't matter about where you've come from. It matters that I love you so much that I died for you." And now I'm not one of the disciples, so I didn't get to look forward to this. So I get to look back and point. And I get to say, it's not about us. It's not about this church. It's not about my ability to speak or the fact that I've been a Christian forever. It's about that there was a man 2,000 years ago that died and loved me. It's about inclusion. And I wish we had gotten it right there. I wish when he said that to the disciples, they were like, "Oh yeah, it's all, like, yeah, we just love everyone. It's about all of us." But the next verse says this, Luke 22:24, "A dispute also arose among them as to which who was considered the greatest." And immediately, when Jesus is talking about inclusion, about bringing people together, they go, "Hey, which one of us is going to be the leader when he's gone?" The first thing they say is like, "Yeah, who gets the power though? Like, yeah, we're all loved, we're all together, but who's the winner? Who wins? Who's number one? Who's the exclusive leader?" And Jesus goes, "You don't get it. If you want to lead, be the least. If you want to receive the most love and the most responsibility, start serving now. Do what I did. Go to the bottom of the barrel, go to the prostitutes, go to the widows, go to the orphans, and love them. If you want to be a leader, go low." He flips the script. He says, "I don't care about you sitting in a high tower in a temple telling everyone what to do. I want you to get down in the mud, and I want you to care and love for my people." And that's why we see in the New Testament the call that the disciples have on all the young churches. The call isn't to hold together and stay away from everyone. It's like, "Hey, I know people want to kill us, but there's people out there that need our help. So you need to go and help them. I know that people don't like you, but you need to try to bring them into the church." Jesus consistently flips the script and changes our ideas of being exclusive and becomes inclusive. I love the quote from Martin Luther King Jr. about segregation, because it still is such an issue that we deal with all the time. And I wish we had gotten it then, and I wish we'd gotten it now, but for some reason in our minds, we want to be exclusive. We wanted to make it all about us. And Martin Luther King lived in a time where he constantly dealt with being pushed to the side and being told he wasn't good enough and being told it didn't matter anything about him because he was black. And just because that one factor that he couldn't control, he was less than, he was not welcome, he was not worth it. And he says this about segregation. He says, "Segregation not only harms one physically, but injures one spiritually. It scars the soul. It is a system which forever stares the segregated in the face, saying, 'You're less than, you're not equal to.'" When we try to come together and say that we're better than other people, we're telling other people that they're not worth it and they're not equal to us. So that's why when Jesus showed up, he immediately stomped it out. He said, "Stop saying it, stop putting yourself higher than, stop trying to be better, and get in the mud and help my people. Get on a cross and love everyone." Jesus took the hardest path possible to show the most love. And still, we argue about the stupid little things to say who's higher, who's better, who has the best theology, and we leave people in the mud saying we're better than we're more exclusive. And we still miss it today. And you can look around at churches, and you can see where people say, well, you have to believe this to come to our church. As long as you wear these clothes, believe these things, and look like this, you're welcome here. But Jesus doesn't want us to do that. He wants us to say, oh, cool, you have issues? Grab a table. Come around the dinner table and have some bread and have some juice and be together in my community. I'm going to ask Levi to come back on stage, and we're going to take communion as a group because Jesus flipped something on us that we need to take a part of right now. We need to understand that as a community, we're going to take a little wafer and a little bit of juice, and we're doing that to point to what God did for us. We're not doing that because it's a tradition or because it makes us better than everyone. We're doing that because we're trying to remember who Jesus was, the love that he showed us, the grace that he showed us. And we're going to show him that we care and we want to reach other people. So if you're here today and it's your first time ever being in this church, welcome. Grab a seat at the table and join in this community who loves you and wants you to take a next step together. There's nothing that is holding you back from joining in this community today. We want to see you take a step and join our community. So as Levi plays this song, you can just take the communion in your seat, but do me a favor. Don't make this about you. Don't make this about a personal moment with God. Make it about the group. Look around. See your brothers and sisters sitting here today that are in community and love each other and want to go affect the 7x7. And remember that we have a Savior that was sitting on a cross dying for us to bring more people in this community here. And know that you have an 8 o'clock service and an 11 o'clock service that today is doing the same thing to show love to this group here, make it about him. So how do we win today? How do we take this and change our lives from this sermon? How do we use what Jesus wanted for us right here in this message to go forth and love people better? It's real simple. Take a step to be inclusive this week. Look at those around you. Look at those in your schools, in your workplaces, and just say, come on. Come join. Don't judge them for their sin, because your sin is just as wicked and dirty to God as theirs is. And know that He died just as much for them as He did for you. So take that communion and leave this place and include others. Join together as a community where we can love more people and reach more people. Not so we can come here and boast about how great we are and be a church where people said they're too good for us. But let's be a church that says they get in the mud and care about others. They love the rest of the world so well that I want to be a part of that. Even if I don't buy into who Jesus is right now, I want to be there because they love so hard that I can't avoid that feeling of just community and love. So may we be a people that are inclusive, that love 757, and that go from here and bring people to sit at our table. Thank you guys so much for being here today. We will see you back next week for the second part of our series.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.